This is Christian Kirk, and you're listening to Roster Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, Roster Watch Nation, welcome back to the epic Roster Watch podcast, brought to you by RosterWatch.com. I'm Alex Dunlap, here with Cody Carpentier, fresh off of Texas practice, where, hey, you guys, man, listen, if you play Devy Leagues, go pick up Jonte Cook from Texas. I'm telling you right now, the wide receiver, another good day in the books for that guy. Cody, how the hell are you doing, brother?
Doing fantastic, man. Good weekend, got some work in. Popped out this mock draft 5.0 on Friday. Been trying to get ready for my top 100 big board across all the positions. Getting close, but not there yet. So good weekend.
Yeah. So the Cody's mock draft 5.0, that'll be the super maniacal discussion we have here today, because Cody, for each new mock, so like version 5.0, he just moves up to five rounds. And I guess version 6.0 will be six rounds. Does this thing ever get to seven?
Yep, 7.0 will be seven rounds. That'll be the week before the draft. And then the night of the draft is just the final one. That's just the one round, as you know.
For the huddle report. Okay. Yep. So for the competition. All right. So let's just get into it. Let's talk about your mock here. I have a couple questions. I mean, pretty chalk here at the very top. And we don't have to go pick by pick, but I just think at the very beginning it gets interesting, because you have Minnesota trading up with Arizona at four. But it's weird because they trade up for Drake May. And I know that you've made the connection with Drake May and the coaching staff there, McCown, all these guys, right? Am I getting that mixed up? Drake May, yep. McCown.
McCown was the high school coach to Drake May. McCown's also played with Sam Darnold, who's currently the Vikings quarterback. And there's just a three or four way connection going on there.
Okay, so my question is this. It goes one to the Bears, Caleb Williams, two to the Commanders, Jaden Daniels. I can see all this happening easily. But then three, New England Patriots, J.J. McCarthy over Drake May?
Yeah, and this is just the thing. I kind of had this conversation with Maddie the other day, and the reason I think I went this direction is the Patriots are in a weird spot where they just turned everything over. Now it's Mayo. Do they – and this is, again, up to them. This is just my feel of the situation, is that they go McCarthy because McCarthy is from Michigan. He won a championship. He's a maniacal, like, just winner. He's got all the mentals just dialed in there. And whereas with Drake May, there is a little bit there. There's a little bit to bake. There's a little bit there to bake. And I'm not saying that's wrong for what the Patriots are trying to do, but maybe they don't want to have to go through that. Maybe they don't want to have to wait for him to put 10, 15 pounds on. They don't want to wait for him to mature a little bit more. Maybe it takes a year and a half. Maybe they don't want that. McCarthy, in the right system, can come in day one. And that Patriots system right now, where they haven't spent a ton of money on receivers, instead they went out and got another 225-pound running back, and they've added some pieces to the offensive line. Maybe that's their goal. Their goal is to maybe not model Michigan, but model a run-centric offense and bring back the defense of the 2005, 2004 seasons with the Patriots, and kind of restart a little bit of a different build here. I mean, the Patriots have always done stuff different, but McCarthy, for me in this situation, it just kind of felt right. And it's not something I've seen a lot, but if Daniels were to go to board two and New England sitting there, why is New England not the one that just goes, no, we want McCarthy? Like, he's the one that's ready to come in and help us, you know, jump back up to the 9-10 win tier in year one. Whereas May, we like him, but he's not Josh Allen. He's not there yet. It's going to take him a couple years if he's going to get there, or Herbert, whatever you want to comp him to. So that's just kind of the feel I had for New England. And then, of course, it just falls right into Minnesota's lap there at four on probably a draft night trade with the Vikings getting up to four.
Yeah, and but so that brings me to the other thing about Arizona. Would they – in that spot, would they trade down? Because then typically you have Tennessee trading up to five from seven with the Chargers. But I would think if – without knowing that was going to happen, or without, I guess you got to take everything into account whenever you're making
a move down the board. But I would think that they would say to themselves, we can't do that because the Chargers are going, you know, they've lost Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. They're going to take a wide receiver. Like, that would be the general line of thinking, yep. right? Yep. So if we trade all the way down, we have between us now the Chargers, and now we're putting the Giants in between us as well, who could, I mean, clearly the Giants, if one of these, if neighbors Harrison falls to them, it feels like they're putting themselves at great risk of not getting one of these top two receivers, if that is indeed what they're thinking about. My question is, were we thinking about the Cardinals as being just the epic landing spot for Marvin Harrison Jr. just because we know Marvin Harrison Jr. is such a high, you know, him and neighbors both, such high-end talents that after the three quarterbacks go, you know that they're going to take one of those guys at four, especially now Hollywood Brown going to the Chiefs, all the rest of it, right? Was it just because everything seemed to fit right, or was it always, man, the Cardinals need to come out of this thing with one of these top wide receivers?
Well, we had this conversation on Friday, right? And I told you that I liked the Cardinals plus 1,100 as a deep sleeper to win that division. And it sounds maniacal because the Niners are there. I get it. Yeah. But the point I was going through this draft, and the way I was unfolding and just looking at what Monty has done in team building the last couple of years and his maneuverability in these drafts, I thought it was interesting. And the reason you do this is because you know the depth of the receiver position, and you're only moving back. You're moving down to 11.
Yeah, but you're.
But I have the Cardinals moving back up to 8, right? And the reason that you can do that is the same reason they did Paris Johnson last year, right? They were sitting at 3. They moved down and back up. And this year they moved down with the Vikings. You're going to add a pick in the 20s, which allows you, we'll talk about it in a little bit, it allows you to get both Darius Robinson and Liatu Latu. That two guys to your defensive line that helps you build the team. Whereas maybe that their grades, and we don't know this, right? We know somebody's out there. Daniel Jeremiah's talked about it. We know somebody's out there has Malik Nabers ahead of Marvin Harrison. We don't know if it's Arizona. We just think Arizona has Marvin number one. Maybe they have Rome. We don't know. So maybe they feel good enough to come down, move back up, and they know that Malik or Rome are going to be there. Maybe it's not that far apart in their grades. So that's why I felt good enough moving the Arizona down, because I knew they were going to get another pick in the back and still get a receiver here in the top 10.
And then so at 5, you have another trade that happens with the Chargers moving up to 5 from 7. Yeah, so the Chargers moving up to 5 from 7 to take Joe Alt. And I mean, we know that that's something that can clearly, you know what I'm saying? That's something I can clearly see happening. I'm just wondering, was that because you feel like I think that the Titans would prefer Alt versus Fashanu. I do think that those are the two that they've kind of circled as saying we'd like to get one of these two. That could be bad intel, but that's intel that we've gotten from people real close to the team. I kind of don't think the Giants are going to take one of those two guys. I would worry that I'm trading up to get Alt because I want to say I don't want the Chargers to get Alt, but I think I'm safe to stay at 7 and get Fashanu. Is it just that you think that Alt is just the much better option?
I think Alt's the much, much better option for this team. I think you still have to look at the Giants as if they're looking at tackle, because really, did they address it? Yes, they addressed it with Jermaine Eleanor, but he's not that good. We don't know what they're going to do with Evan Neal. They could still move him into guard, even though they signed a couple guards. There's no such thing as having too many offensive linemen. There's no such thing as having too many cornerbacks. And the Giants are always going to be a threat in the six hole right now for the Tennessee Titans. And with the Chargers there at 5, they should be looking tackle, right? We've talked about this, looking right tackle. They could be looking receiver, and they could be looking edge. The conversations we heard at the combine were about they want Alt or Fashanu, but they don't know if either one's going to be there. There has to be a sense of aggression there, and they've spent money at the receiver position. They spent money on Tony Pollard. They drafted Skoronski early last year. They traded for Legarius Sneed. Go get your tackle. Go get your tackle, protect Will Levis. You're giving him all the tools possible. Give him the last one. Give him that road grader, that stalwart on the left side. and see what this Tennessee Titan team can be. It, all you have to do is move up two spots. It's not that large of a bump, and it assures you that you get the guy you want.
So with the Chargers, they trade down. You got the Giants, just Marvin Harrison just falls into their lap. Gosh, he would sell so many jerseys.
So many.
But then after that, it gets back to the Chargers.
Yep.
And you have them taking Jared Verse. So you have them, you have them possibly swindling the underrated sort of sneaky spot of Jared Verse that we like at plus 700 at number 8 to Atlanta. But then you have Atlanta getting out of it. This thing has all kinds of trades. Once Verse gets taken, you have Atlanta bailing out and Arizona moving back up. In your mind, the Chargers have never been in the business of offensive tackle. Like, is that the deal? I mean,
the thing is, when you look back at what Harbaugh is doing and what Harbaugh has done in team building, he's looking at the offensive line, he's looking at the defensive line. And that year, the couple years that he was there in San Francisco, some of the picks he made, Eldon Smith, top 10 overall, Tank Carradine, Corey Lemonore, guys in the first two rounds, Eldon Smith, of course, in the top 10. They have Khalil Mack on the roster right now, right? He's going to be gone after this year. Joey Bosa has an out after this year. They're not probably going to let him walk out after it, but his contract is up after the 2025 season. They drafted Tulipalutu last year from USC, but that's three edge rushers. And I got a ton of flack on Twitter for this pick specifically. You're an idiot, whatever. You can fill in the blank about this pick for Jared Verse. But Jared Verse, like we've talked about before, the metrics, the athleticism through the testing is lined up with Myles Garrett. Him and Myles Garrett are the only two.
I think, and the play strength.
A few times here. Exactly.
Testing. Yeah.
And it's been kind of goes into the flat circle conversation, is that Verse has been in this conversation, but there's a little fatigue to it, and maybe he didn't live up quite to the hype during the season, but the testing comes back through and reminds you who he was. He played well enough at Florida State. Khalil Mack's over 30. Bosa is 29. Bosa's going to be 29 here in the next 100 days, which is before the season. He's going to be 29. Verse comes in here and gives you some fresh legs, and in a year, maybe it's Thule and Jared Verse, and Bosa is on the trade block in the middle of the season if the Chargers aren't going the right direction. And all of a sudden, 2025 comes around, and there's no Bosa, and there's no Mack. So that's a lot to type out into a tweet, but that's kind of the thought process that I went through right there is Harbaugh trying to build
this team. These days you can
type it. Yeah, I mean, it might take me a week to type it, but that's kind of the whole thought is – yes, receiver's awesome, but guess what? You have more draft picks, and this receiving class is sick. I'm sitting here going through my rankings today, top to bottom, and I'm at like wide receiver 23, and I'm like, man, I really want this guy to be 12, but you can't. And that's the art and the greatness of this receiving class. So yes, they need receivers. Of course they do. But we just keep hearing this crap about Josh Palmer. They love Josh Palmer. They did draft Quentin last year. Yeah. But I'm saying you're hearing it. So somebody's saying something, right? Whether it's BS so they can trade him, or whether they actually like him, it doesn't
propaganda
matter.
From Byron. Now it's been seeping into your head. He loves Josh Palmer for some reason. I have no idea.
But then tackle as well. There's, you know, they've been able to maneuver at the right tackle position with Pipkins out there. And there's a couple of tackles that you can still get out even to the third round that maybe they aren't going to be completely ready. Like Christian Jones has seeped himself into third round right now from Texas. He's a guy that he kind of feels like the last leg in the first three rounds at the right tackle position. And there's guys dependable for the next couple of rounds for the Chargers to get. But edge, Jared Verse, best player on the board, take him.
You sent the Chargers later on in the second round. You sent them Kingsley from Suamatia. I don't know how to say
yep,
it.
Yep.
From BYU. But then I noticed, I'm looking through it, you only sent them. Gosh, you sent them Jalen McMillan. If he's the only wide receiver that they take in this draft, they take him early fourth round. What a landing spot would be for McMillan and like our fourth round dynasty stuff that we like as far as rookie drafts for that guy. That would be incredible, because you know what, he would come in and be the he would be the immediate replacement for Keenan Allen. It's just he's a very That is that a comp that we have written down for him? We need to go back and just write that down as a comp. It's actually kind of a good comp. I didn't think about it until you sent him to the Chargers, but it's kind of a good comp based on what we saw down the stretch in the Pac championship, and then in the first, I guess, both games of the college football playoff. Man, just the way he can operate out of the slot, the kind of space that he creates, and those soft spots in the zone that he can really exploit in a really Keenan Allen like way. So that's an interesting landing spot for me. So that's basically how the top 10 sort of, we can round out the rest of it, because basically once you, I've noticed, and this is me and Mike Band, we'll have our mock draft meeting of the minds. I hope this year Band's super busy with some family stuff, but if we can have it this year, we just do the top 10, because figuring out the top 10 is the springboard to the rest of your draft. And if you screw up the top 10, you're going to have a horrible grade in the huddle report. So let's just get through the rest of the top 10. You have, the Cardinals trading back from – so they trade down to 11, then they trade back up from 11 to number 8 to go get Malik Nabers. And so they miss out on Marvin Harrison Jr., but maybe they're like me. I'd like to grade them both. I'd like to be a coward like you were to start this thing. I'd like to grade them both as wide receiver 1 in the class. I can't. I'm going to have Nabers as wide receiver 1 by the – you know, and it's terrifying. Right? It's terrifying. But I think some teams are going to, like, these teams work, you know, these teams work on this as maniacally, more maniacally than we do. You, like, they've gone and they've studied every little thing. They've talked to every janitor at the facility. They've done, you know, research after research after research. And there are teams out there that have Nabers over MHJ. They just are. So who's to say that they didn't, and then they trade down and they pick up this haul because of it? We'll just round it out. You can talk about what you want to say. You have at 9. I'm sure that the Bears love it that Fashanu falls here from Penn State. And then you have the Jets. Gosh, the Jets get Romo Odunze. So Garrett Wilson, Romo Odunze, Mike Williams. Who lines up in the slot? it's kind of tough to figure out.
Him, sure. Roman Garrett probably switch off there, but really what it comes down to is Mike Williams is a 1-year rental. And after this year, it's Rome and Garrett Wilson, and they just get sick for the next, you know, 8, 9, 10 years, as long as they can keep both under the contract and have a quarterback to throw the football to them. So I think that fit makes a lot of sense. Of course, people are going to entertain Brock Bowers there. With Fashanu and Alt not making it to 10, I'm not sure the Jets pull the trigger on tackle, given that they did sign 2 40-year-olds. But I do like them going Odunze here. And then the Bears, like you said, Olu Fashanu, with him falling to them at 9. How do you not pair a guy that played high school football with Caleb Williams up with Caleb Williams in Chicago in the top 10?
I forgot about that, but that was the big storyline at the combine. People always asked him about that. It didn't seem like he didn't really have any stories about, you know, things they did as friends or anything like that. But I mean, there were certainly, you know, teammates, man. So I think that would be a cool reunion for sure.
And I think that's just a good fit overall. And then Nabers, like you said, this is part of the thing I'd talked about. It's just a straight up masterclass by Monty Awesome Fortin. Like I said, he's growing in my internal general manager favoritism grading and rankings. Monty Awesome Fortin from the Cardinals as he bounces back up to 8 to take Malik.
So he's moving up your GM rankings because you gave him a good mock draft.
No, because I believe in his maniacal maneuvers in the draft in order
since you believe in him, you've bestowed him with powers in this mock draft to make these awesome moves. All right. Fair enough. Monty Austin Ford, dude, who knew Cody was such a big fan of the big bald man. Okay. Let's see here. There's fantasy guys. Let's just kind of go down the list here. Just to the Cincinnati Bengals, you sent Brock Bowers. He didn't run his 40, right? He's waiting for April. Amarius are waiting for April 10th to run. What, is he claiming that he has something?
He had a hamstring injury. Soft tissue hamstring injury is what he said at the pro day.
Okay. And then after that, fantasy wise, at number 21, you're sent my most maniacal dream come true. I did see Mike McDaniel talking to Xavier Worthy after the Texas Pro Day, where Worthy just, gosh, man, he looks really good. we didn't get to see him run routes at the combine. He figured that he doesn't need to do anything after he blazes a 4.21. But the fact is that, you know, he went and ran routes from Quinn Ewers at the Texas Pro Day, looked much better than Adonai Mitchell, right? During the, just the way he got in and out of routes and the way he moves. He didn't drop a pass the whole day, whereas Adonai dropped two. But how do you stop? I mean, I've just said it. It's like Mike McDaniel puts Xavier Worthy, the fastest guy out there, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, and says, all right, go ahead and stop us. It's just,
And you got Devon Achane out of the backfield. It's like, this is like the NFL version of who beat Duncanville this weekend in the 4x1, set that record. I can't pronounce the school, but it was like Anticosta or something.
Oh, Atascocita.
There you go. And and they both broke the 4x1 world national records. And it's like, this is what this is in Miami. Like they literally Worthy, Waddle, Hill, Achane. This is Mike McDaniel's pipe dream.
Wide receiver 5 off the board. You have Brian Thomas going to the Detroit Lions, I think, unless I missed somebody.
Yeah, what do you think about that landing spot there? Because everyone's aiming at the Bills. Everyone's aiming, you know, I'm aiming at the Cowboys, the Bengals, the Eagles, and he falls to 29 here after Buffalo does the thing they should do, which is go D-line, take Fisk, make him a first-round pick, and Thomas falls to 29, and – you know, they have Josh Reynolds. They've been playing Khalif Raymond. And now you get Brian Thomas with Jameson.
But they did bring in DJ Chark. Now he's back to – now he's with Carolina. And we've always said that Brian Thomas, you know, could be – I think maybe I'm starting to think that, you know, not his absolute floor, but kind of like his lower median expectations, like a DJ Chark type. So, obviously, that's been – and that and they made that move from a personnel standpoint after – already having in place Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams, who are the, you know, the two, you know, Amon-Ra wasn't a first rounder, but Jameson's a first rounder. Amon-Ra is a superstar. Obviously that type of player is one they think can complement those two whenever they're at the height of their powers. So I think it's fine. And I think it makes sense. Let's see next up here. You don't have any running. You see, you have Troy Franklin going to the, gosh, Troy Franklin to the Panthers.
You missed 30, dude. You missed 30 overall.
Oh, 30. Oh, I'm sorry. Penix. Who's he going to? The Rams.
The Rams.
The Rams trade up with Baltimore to get Michael Penix Jr. Can't say I hate it. I know you don't hate it.
I don't hate it. That's one spot where, you know, like I wrote in my comments here, Vegas, Denver, the Giants, they're all like, when should I pull the trigger on quarterback? And then it's all of a sudden the Rams, boom, bop, right up to 30. And they just draft Penix right underneath them. And, you know, we've heard the question marks around Stafford's back and all these things, his elbow, all these problems he's always had. But if you can bring Penix in for a year, sit there, let Stafford roll out into the sunset on his own time, then you roll out Penix with Puka. I mean, come on, what are we doing here? I love that. And it's one of those things too that just comes out of left field and you're like, whoa, we haven't heard about that one. And that happens at the quarterback position sometimes in the NFL.
I don't like Troy Franklin to the Panthers. I feel like Troy Franklin needs to fall into a quarterback situation and a spot with where there's not so much growing to do all around, you know, growing all over the place. Troy Franklin, I think he's a great prospect. He's super raw and he is certainly a developmental prospect. Maybe it's fine to have a guy develop with a young quarterback like Bryce Young, you know, but I think I'd like to see him maybe go to let's just say I'd be more happy to see him go to a spot like, you know, with a, you know, a quarterback like a, you know, like a Mahomes or a Herbert or a Burrow or, you know, something like that. Now, some of those depth charts might not be quite as appetizing. I don't think that I'm not sure that the Panthers depth chart is unappealing per se. You know, they bring in Deontay Johnson and stuff like that, but I don't have any hope for Jonathan Mingo. Do you still have hope for any? You know, I never had much hope for Mingo. Like, it's just, you know, DJ Chark's there. Thielen's old. I think it would be a good landing spot. I'm not sure how excited I would be for it.
Yeah. I mean, He feels like a Chark kind of replacement. That's what he feels like to me. And they hope he can just come in and be that guy and they can eventually roll out Mingo and Franklin, and I don't know if I trust Mingo, but they gave him 10 targets a couple times last year. They got a lot of stuff to do here. The fit just feels right with the DJ Chark rule. That's why I put him here.
Those Mingo targets were such bait for people in PFS. Like, you know, they would say, like, dude, it, like, the model says this. I'm like, dude, I don't care. Like, can you see how dysfunctional that whole thing is? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's the same thing with Hollywood Brown for a few weeks where he was just chalk, so cheap, and just the offense was just dysfunctional. All right, New Orleans Saints next. So Adonai Mitchell's taking a tumble for you here. If you haven't projected to go 45 overall, a lot of people see him as a lock first rounder after he runs the 4.35. I think the Saints makes good sense. I mean, you could kind of see him being a faster kind of Michael Thomas type player.
Yeah, I like Adonai with the Saints and taking a tumble. I wouldn't really look at Adonai this way. I got the same comment from a Texas fan on Twitter was, "What, you know, why'd you drop Adonai so far?" And I'm just like, the running was great, but the attention has been given to Brian Thomas because he weighed 20 pounds heavier, 10 pounds, 15 pounds heavier than Adonai did at the combine while he ran a similar speed. I think Adonai's range of draft pick is somewhere in that 23, 24 to this range, 45, 50. And that has more to do with the wide receiver position than anything. Is the depth is nice. The strength at the top is beautiful. And Adonai could just happen to slip because you see a run on tackles like we're going to see here early in round two. Whether, you know, some of these guys like Jackson Powers Johnson, if he doesn't go in round one, he's going to be there in the top of round two. And then you're going to have a run of these couple tackles that are going off the board. And all of a sudden, D lineman, edge, corner, and receivers just happen to fall down a little bit. And, you know, we heard Daniel Jeremiah talk about this a couple weeks ago in a couple podcasts saying, like, the depth of this receiver class is going to allow teams to focus on other positions kind of in round two and round three and allow for some more values in the latter part of round three and early round four.
I'll just go through a couple of these. You can comment on them how you like. You have at 48 overall, Ricky Pearsall, all going at 48 to Jacksonville. Seems too high to me. The first running back you have off the board is Jalen Wright from Tennessee. What does this M next to his name mean to the Dallas?
M is a comment at the top of the screen. If you see it, I put, today my target is to match 20 players to the teams that they will be drafted by in April. Look for the notation of M throughout the mock. This is more of a team feel. This feels like the right team. This feels like maybe not the spot, but this feels like the right team that this player could get matched to. That was okay. The target with the M there.
That makes sense. Kind of like the moves that you can make in the huddle report deal where you make like some kind of fake trade up because you think he's going to go to this team, but there's no way you can get him to fall there and stuff yes. like that. Right. Okay. So Jalen Wright, I think that's certainly very interesting. I think it's interesting that you have Spencer Rattler here. You're going to the Raiders. You talk about how you're becoming more and more impressed with him. I'm not more impressed with him, but maybe you can talk about why you're more impressed with Rattler than you were coming in. And then finally, these two, I'm not saying I don't like your mock. I would not like the landing spot of Keon Coleman going to the Baltimore Ravens. I don't think that wouldn't be something where if I had Keon Coleman in one of my dynasty leagues that I'd be happy to see him fall. But then the other one is, it just doesn't make sense. Ladd McConkey to the Bills. I mean, they just brought in Curtis Samuel to play slot. They have Khalil Shakir. Dalton Kincaid plays out of the slot, all this stuff. I'm just, man, I'd be tilted out of my brain if my guy Ladd, who I have so much of, goes to Buffalo. It feels like there's a lot of roadblocks in the way there.
It does feel like there's a lot of roadblocks, and they've tried this big body outside thing with Gabe Davis the last couple of years, and they still have a couple of them sitting on the roster in Mac Hollins and Justin Shorter. But another thing they've brought in is they've brought in KJ Hamler on a reserve deal. They brought in Andy Isabella on a reserve deal. They signed Curtis Samuel. Khalil Shakir's kind of the same body type. Maybe they're trying to find some different types, different body types, different widgets that can play multiple roles in the field, slot and outside, move these guys around. And Ladd, for me, is just a professional wide receiver that fits into an offense and can make a Josh Allen's life a little bit easier with, like you said, Kincaid also, who can play out there. So I think that's one of the reasons I like that spot. Keon Coleman to the Ravens. Again, you hate it. I hate it. But it feels right to go out there and play – in that X role, kind of opposite of Zay Flowers, put Rashad Bateman in the slot and give, you know, Lamar a true set of wide receiver weapons. I still like Keon Coleman, but I do think he falls here. This is kind of the area that we saw Pickens go. We saw DK Metcalf go, guys who tested better than Keon did. So I think he falls a little bit. And the Ricky Pearsall thing, Ricky Pearsall, like I said, this is a feel more about the team than anything. I could have probably put an M next to these guys, but Trent Baalke was supposed to go up to that Florida Pro Day the other day, and he completely I think he had like I can't remember, it was like 6, 7, or 8 staff members were supposed to go to that Florida Pro Day, and the minute Ricky Pearsall pulled out, said he wasn't going to test, Baalke and his entire staff stayed home in Jacksonville. To get Jacksonville to Gainesville is not that far. They could have just went over there to check out the other prospects. They didn't. They stayed home. And Ricky Pearsall is a guy that has gotten helium to push up into round two, as has Spencer Rattler. And I bring him up. I was mildly impressed. I thought he had a very good pro day. I think rolling left, there were still some stuff where he left it short. Nothing was really, you know, 60 yards plus downfield. He did have a couple that hit 55, 56, nice, accurate balls. But I think Rattler's one dating back to the Senior Bowl, right? The draft starts in Mobile, and he had a great Senior Bowl. Should preface this with very solid Senior Bowl. Nobody had a great Senior Bowl at the quarterback position. Very solid Senior Bowl, won the MVP award there, and he's just done things right through the process at a solid combine as far as our grading goes. You've heard all things positive. You've heard his growth, his maturation from Oklahoma to South Carolina. I would not be surprised if Spencer Rattler is drafted ahead of Bo Nix in the 2024 NFL draft, and that's why I put him here, 57 overall to the Las Vegas Raiders.
All right, so with the rest of them, you can check out the mock over at rosterwatch.com. It's free to check out. But, Cody, before we go, I want to get it from you first, and I'll tell you mine. Your favorite fantasy landing spot of the remaining of anybody, right? So let's just say from like McConkey and Coleman on down. So we're talking on your favorite kind of mid to late second round and down landing spot. For fans.
My favorite,
and it could be a wide receiver, it could be a running back. I guess it could be a quarterback or a tight end. If we're talking super flex or tight end premium or something like that. But as far as one you put together and you said, "Oh man, this is awesome," they go here. This thing goes ape. You know what?
It doesn't happen in 2024 unless an injury happens. But the growth and the maturation of this running back in round 4, pick 113, is one of my favorite landing spots because of a recent acquisition they made this offseason. The Baltimore Ravens drafting running back, 235-pounder, 6'2", Braylon Allen out of the University of Wisconsin.
The next Derrick Henry for whenever the wheels finally come off of him, which they don't appear to yet. My favorite one that I love the most, Cody, is a similar one, right, where there's an existing running back that has a very, very similar skill set, and somebody might just come in and take his job. And the running back that has the similar skill set is Rashad White. The pick is number 89 to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Mr. Will Shipley.